Hello, and welcome to the Project Elected podcast. Project Elect is a nonpartisan nonprofit whose goal is pretty simple. We want to get more Latter-day Saint women involved in public service. On this podcast, we interview amazing Latter-day Saint women who are involved in public service. My name's Audrey Perry Martin. I'm the founder of Project Elect and the host of this podcast. I have really been looking forward to talking with today's guests for a long time. Marilee Boyack is an attorney. She's an author. She's a speaker. She's many other things. And she's been in a public official too. She's written many, many books. She speaks at Time Out for Women and BYU's Education Week. She's incredible. She's inspiring. And I'm so thrilled I get to chat with her today. Marilee, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. Super excited to be here.
I would love it if you would just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background. You've done so many things that you'll probably have to pick and choose. But
right. There are so many days when I say, how did a little girl from Detroit, Michigan end up doing this? You know, it has been pretty remarkable. And to me, it's just a testament to, if you turn your life over to the Lord, he does crazy stuff with it. So let's see, where do I begin? I mutated early. In fact, I ran across a paper from when I was 7 years old. What do you want to be when you grow up? And I wrote a lawyer and a senator. Isn't that whacked?
Wow.
And my parents were not political at all. I don't even think I knew a lawyer or a senator. I'm surprised they even knew what that was. So I ran across that later after having run for office, and I went, well, there it is, you know. So I would say my life really has consisted of trailblazing. I never had mentors. I never had anyone saying, you know, go this way. It very much was driven by the Lord, because, you know, it was so new. I was super involved in high school. I discovered clubs and student government and went bonkers and loved it. It was such a natural fit. And it just kind of kept growing from there. You know, I remember I graduated in 3 years. I'm a brainiac. I can't cook, but I can think. And so anyway, I received a direct prompting, go to law school. I'm like, are you kidding? And get this, back in the day, there were only 4 women in my class, and only 2 of us made it through the first year. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So it was, now it's like 50, 60% female, which is awesome. So anyway, I kind of started down that path, and then began doing a lot of speaking, and love that. That's my happy place. I know other people, you know, that's scary. Oh, put me in front of several thousand and I'm a happy clam. So that was a good and natural fit. And then it just kind of grew and grew. I started getting involved in PTA and my children's schools. I started seeing things in the community that bothered me. And so I started to kind of step up and ask for them to be fixed and learn the process. And once you get a taste of that, then you really go crazy. The minute I got flashing lights and safety protocols put in front of the elementary school because it was my children's school and it was very dangerous. And once you do something, you're like, oh my gosh, I think you realize one person can make a difference. And once you realize that one person can make a difference and that can be you, no stopping you. No stopping. I, you know, was able to get in lights and safety protocols in front of my kids' elementary school. And once I got a taste of being successful at getting some change done, I just kind of went with it. and I find a lot of people do this. It's so exciting. It's exciting to see people realize that one person can make a difference. And that one person can be you. And so I just began to do one community thing after another. I'd see something and I'd go, you know, get it resolved or get it changed. And it just kind of grew and grew and grew. I had always wanted to run for public office. And so that grew as a very natural outcome of all the community work that I was doing, was that, you know, I kind of reached a point. I had a midlife crisis when I was 36, let's be honest. And it took 20 minutes. And I decided that at that point, I wanted to run for office and I wanted to teach at BYU Education Week. And so that was my start. And I went ahead and ran for office. And on we went. Didn't win. Lost. Mm-hmm. Lost. But very good experience. And it was interesting. I lost and I just said to the Lord, what was that all about? You know, I felt very directed to run. I'm like, what was that? Well, it took about another year and a half, 2 years, and they approached me, leaders in the church approached me to be the regional coordinator for Prop 22 in California, which was the first traditional marriage effort. And I thought I would have never known what to do if I hadn't run for office. So you never know what things are going to lead to, you know, what skills you're going to learn, what experiences you're going to gain. You know, Lord knows, even Absolutely. If you lose,
yeah.
Totally worth it.
Yeah. He has a plan for everything and we don't always see it. So, and I, you know, a lot of people lose their first time, but it sounds like you must have run again, even after losing.
Yeah. So, I ran, lost, and I thought, you can't keep me from being effective in the community. And so, boy, I just cranked it up even more, and just did it just a lot of projects in the community doing, all kinds of things. Some really yummy ones. Anyway, I'm thinking of all the projects. It was like, really cool. And then we had a wildfire breakout in Southern California. I was living in Poway. We had a terrible wildfire. And I went to the evacuation center. And the Red Cross guy said, I'm putting you in charge. I said, excuse me? I was like, what? And he said, yeah, you seem like a go-to kind of person. You're in charge. And I turned around and it was just a melee of thousands of people who were evacuating. And I thought, this looks like a cross between a Relief Society meeting and a PAC meeting. I can do this. And so I ended up running the evacuation center for 4 days. And I'll never forget what happened on the fourth day, after caring for all those families and doing all of that work. The city council sashayed in for their photo op and their media op. And they just stood up there and said how, you know, terrible this was, but the community was rallying together. And then they all left. And I was standing next to a guy who had lost everything. And he turned to me and said, was that the mayor of the city council? And I said, yeah. And he said, I expected more. And I watched their backs walk out of that building. And I thought, I'm running again. We have got to have someone who cares. And so I then went out and did fire relief. We had about 80 families who lost everything. And I did the fire relief efforts, raised a ton of money, got a ton of stuff for them all, and got them all settled again. And then I ran for office the next year and won in a landslide. Even though all of the incumbents did not support me, the newspapers all turned against me because it was a good old boy network like you've never seen. Everyone was against me, but the people knew. They had seen, and so the people knew. And like I say, won in a landslide, kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always fun.
That's one of the videos I want to see in the hereafter. Is all those guys going, "Dang, she won."
I love it.
That's my natural man. I'm so sorry.
It's all right. It comes out in all of us. What initially made you decide to run? I mean, we talked about how you just kind of, since you were 7 years old, you know, my 7 year old wants to be a Paw Patrol when she grows up. So that's impressive. How did that decision process work? Like when you were first deciding to run?
I have the heart of a doer and a fixer and a servant. And that's my heart. And I saw that there were things that I could do on the city council that I couldn't do as just, you know, a regular citizen. And so it wasn't for my personal ego or anything. Frankly, I could care less. But I saw that much good could be done in the community if we had a person on that council that actually cared about the people. And so that's what really spurred me on was, you know, there's just something to be said for a citizen calling you or a resident calling you with a problem and you've got it fixed in 24 hours. I mean, there's just something that's wonderful about that. And so that's why I ran, to do that for my community.
Yeah, that's incredible. And, you know, I wish we had more public servants like that who are doing it, not because of their ego, but because they care and they think they can make a difference.
You can sniff them out a mile away.
you really can. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it seems like a lot of LDS women you know, they're doing service in so many different ways and mm-hmm. they overlook public service as something they should be doing. And that kind of confuses me because of what you just said, because there's mm-hmm. so much good you can do in your communities mm-hmm. as a public servant, whether you run for office or whether you're behind the scenes. And so how do we talk to these women and explain to them why they need to run?
Well, first of all, I would read the talk, A Plea to My Sisters, from President Nelson. And I would read that about once a week. We have received an absolute call as the women of the church to have our voices be heard in the public square, to step up, to serve, to be organized and efficient and articulate. And I love it how we're supposed to be articulate in happy ways. I always love that. And so I think in these last days, there is a desperate need for light. And one righteous LDS woman stepping forward has incredible influence. Just the mere running. I ran for our legislature a couple years ago. And I'll never forget, I was talking to a woman and she said, I have three little girls. I have three daughters. They have been watching you for years and they are now watching you run for office and they're very proud of you and they want to emulate that. And I think, oh my goodness, our power of influence is huge. And frankly, I think every school board, every city council, every county commissioner there needs to be a strong LDS woman in there to have that influence in these latter days. That if we had that, our country would change probably overnight. I mean, that influence, that spirit that you bring, that sensitivity that you bring, changes communities.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. I mean, how amazing would it be if we had LDS women mm. in all levels of government working for their communities and serving? It would really absolutely change the world. But we see a lot of hesitations when these women are mm. thinking about running, and you know, they're afraid of the negativity or about mm-hmm. having enough time or being qualified. And you know, how can we address those issues? I mean, I know that I just listed three of them, but
First, I think we start with, do you feel the call? Do you feel the call in your heart? I now do a ton of pro-life work here in Utah. Why? Because I felt the call. And so I think we need to really pray and ask Heavenly Father, you know, is this something that you want me to do? And then we cannot react with fear. One of the things, I've dealt with fear my whole life, but I refuse to let fear prevail in my life. I want to let God prevail in my life. And those two can't exist together, right? And so I think it's really important to respond to those feelings that we have, those feelings of doing good, a desire to do good, a desire to do change. I've been speaking 26 years at Education Week, and I cannot tell you the number of women that have come up to me and said, oh my gosh, you know, after I heard you, I felt like I was supposed to run for the school board. And it's, they're so darling. They're like, I never expected to do this in my life. And most of them have been very successful, which is pretty incredible. So if you feel that call, I would then start learning from other people. Why reinvent the wheel? And so I mentor women that are running all the live long day, all the time. You know, I get calls from all over the country from women. So go to see, I never had that. I never had a mentor, but dang, I wish I had. And so reach out to men and women that you know that are doing this and ask for their expertise, ask for their help. And the whole, I don't have enough expertise. Baloney. You are a citizen of the United States or whatever country, if we have other countries, you are a citizen and you have every right to a voice and you have the spirit. Think of all the politicians that don't have that. That's all you need. That's all you need. You don't need anything else. You don't need to be articulate. You don't need to be you know, a brainiac. You don't have to be any of those things. You don't even have to be an extrovert. you already have the skill set necessary to do that. And so I think that you tap into that of, you know, not letting fear. Now, time. Time is an important consideration. Mm-hmm. I think as LDS women, we realize the critical importance of spending enough time and investing enough time with our families, mm-hmm. And with our faith. Absolutely number one. But I will tell you, when you're on the Lord's errand, there is always enough time. I look back and I think, how did I do all that? You know, I mean, there are some years where I was doing an insane amount of things. And I think, how did I even do that? When you're on the Lord's work, you will find enough time. Mm-hmm. You will find enough time.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's excellent advice. all of it. Thank you for sharing that. I especially like how, you know, because time is a consideration and it's hard. There's mm-hmm. different seasons in our life and there's different times mm-hmm. when we may have time and may not. But, you know, if you pray about it and you feel the call, then the Lord will make it happen.
Time works.
He'll give you the time. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I want to speak to your comment on, you know, avoiding contention and those kinds of things. You know, let's not be naive. Politics are messy. You know, public service is messy. We get it. You know, I mean, I've been doing this for, you know, 35 years now. Okay, we get it. And sometimes people say to me, Marilee, you really should be more Christ-like. And I kind of laugh because there are two sides to Christ's personality. Christ began and ended his earthly ministry by going into the temple and casting out all the money changers with a scourge, tipping over tables. I mean, total mayhem, okay? And he ended his ministry that way. And he was not, he did not mince words. Boy, when he was ripping on us lawyers, hello, uh-huh. much deserved, you know, and the Pharisees and all, he did not mince words. And one of my favorite verses, it talks about Enoch, and it said, all men were offended because of him. I'm thinking, awesome. I can't wait to meet Enoch, man. That's awesome. Because he spoke truth and it did so fearlessly. Yeah. And so I think we need to realize that there will be conflict. In fact, there was a wonderful talk given at BYU Education Week about a year ago. Who gave that? Drawn a mental blank. Anyway, and he said, we cannot avoid conflict, but we can avoid contention. And I think as LDS women, we can really dial into that. We're used to contention, you know, well, I'll say contention, but we're used to conflict. We're used to our children whining and griping and saying, oh, you're not fair. And right. We're used to this. I mean, this is just, you know, it's part of mortality, really. And it's part of life. And I don't think we can be namby-pamby and say, it's all going to be just peaches and roses and wonderful. And no, mortality is not that way. We need to be brave. We need to be bold. We need to be fearless, particularly in calling out evil. Man, people said, you're going into pro-life? And I go, yeah. And they said, you know, people will not like that. I go, bring it. Absolutely bring it. When it comes to fighting against evil, I got to be honest, I'm pretty fearless on that one. You know, I have no problem with that. But we can't be weak. We can't be fearful. And even more importantly, we cannot be apathetic. Nation, our community is in our hands. And I always taught my children to avoid criticism. It's a saying that's out there. Do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing. So I think you need to realize mm-hmm. that even Christ, I mean, they wanted to kill him. Okay, so if you're running for politics and they don't want to kill you, you're better off, right? You know, I mean, so we're just going to face those things. Mm-hmm. It's just part of the process. I try to be very clear, very firm, very steadfast, very fearless. I don't have to be nasty. I don't have to be shrill. I don't have to get freaked out. I don't have to take things personally. These are all choices that we can make. But we can. Mm-hmm. We need to be getting past that. Of, ooh, you know, I don't want to upset anybody. I don't want to offend anybody. Sorry. Christ didn't operate that way, and neither do I.
So I really like what you said about fearlessly speaking the truth. I think that is such an important thing to keep in our mind, especially as we're worried about offending people and worried about getting into politics where, you know, people are going to be mean. There's going to be trolls and they're going to be mean and they're going to be mad at us for doing what we believe is right. And we have to be okay with that and be fearless.
Mm-hmm. And I always think, if God can't count on me to speak up, who can he count on?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If he can't count on the women of the church to stand up and step forward, who's he going to count on?
Yep.
I mean, he's counting on us. We were held for the latter days because we were valiant people. Up in the pre-mortal yep. life, we were valiant daughters. And if he can't count on us to be courageous and firm and fearless and all these things, who else is he going to count on? We're it.
Yeah. Exactly. And I get frustrated sometimes because I talk to a lot of women and they'll be really passionate about these issues. And you can tell, you know, they feel really inspired about them. But then you ask them if they'll run for office and they'll say, oh, I would never do that. But at the same time, you know, we're not supposed to just sit around on a rocking chair on our porch as the world ends. We're supposed to be a light. We're supposed to be an example. We're supposed to be doing everything we can. So, you know, I really think being fearless is such an important part.
And I love it when they say, you know, I could never do that. And I go, why not? Why not?
Exactly.
You have a fabulous skill set. Why not you? Yeah. Obviously, the Lord's been preparing you. Get going.
Yeah. And dig a little deeper into those reasons. Because, I think there's a lot of us right now, a lot of LDS women who are seeing what's going on in the world and are, you know, really passionate about it and really care about it. And I think the Lord is putting that in our hearts and we got to do something about it.
And oh, man, do I agree with that? That the Lord is calling the LDS women. Look at the last 5 years. Look at, collect talks about women. It has escalated like incredible. And they're talking about the power of the priesthood that we get through the temple. They're talking about a much greater value of women. Elder Ballard, President Ballard has given some incredible talks on women. The prophet who has a zillion daughters has given incredible talks on women. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the church leadership sees what we're capable of and more importantly, sees what the Lord wants us to do.
Yeah.
And so they're out there encouraging us. And meanwhile, Satan's trying to make us all afraid. Satan's trying to say, oh, you can't do that. What will everybody think? What if you lose? Big deal. In fact, it was interesting when I lost the first time, I thought I'm a achievement-oriented individual, as you could probably tell. And I lost, and it was the first time I'd like failed at anything in, you know, decades. And it was devastating. I remember waking up at 4 a.m. freaked and driving all over town, pulling down my signs. I mean, I was devastated, but that Sunday, I'll never forget it. I went to church and this woman who was a very simple woman. She was a mom and a grandma. And she said, I'm going to get emotional. I'm so grateful to Mary Lee for running. She goes, we got involved in the political process for the first time in our lives. She said, we will now stay involved. She said, it was such a blessing to my family to watch Mary Lee run and to participate in that process. And I'm grateful. And I thought, oh my word. Honestly, when I say simple, I mean seriously simple. And I was shocked. Mm-hmm. And all the women chimed in Relief Society and just said how their lives had been impacted and changed. And there was not one ounce of, you know, oh man, what a failure. She lost. Oh no. I mean, they were so proud of me for having the guts to run, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I realized losing is not a failure.
Yeah.
Losing is a learning process. Yeah. You know, I've lost a couple of times and I thought if that's the worst thing that can happen, that's nothing. It's nothing. Cause I've learned. Mm-hmm. I've learned. So yeah, Satan is really out there fanning that flame of fear, trying to get us to be chicken or trying to get us to just be apathetic.
Yeah,
I remember this one woman I was working on a children's issue, and she goes, I'm a grandma, it doesn't impact me anymore. And I go, who do you think is going to be your doctor and your dentist and your accountant? I mean, these children are our legacy. And I remember her just trying to excuse her apathy, you know, with that. I'm like, sorry, nope, don't buy it.
I can see you not letting her off the hook for that.
No, I did not. Very gently and kindly and lovingly just gave her a little course correction. So.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, you know, and failure is, it's not, most people fail at least a few times when they're running for office. That's just, even the big people, even the people running for president, they fail
like
a few
I say,
times.
Mm-hmm. You may be learning a skill set for something else the Lord wants you to do that you may not even know at the time. I ended up doing Prop 22 as a regional coordinator for Prop 8. I ended up being the national spokesman for Boy Scouts. None of that would have occurred if I had not run and lost. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I could add to that list many other things. So we never know what the Lord is preparing us to do. But I think running for office is never a loss. Even if you win, you lose, whatever, that experience, you don't lose anything. You only gain if you go into it with the right heart.
Yeah, absolutely. And not just you. Like you said, the women in your ward felt very inspired by your run. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the young women and the primary kids also, you know, but I have three daughters too, like that woman you talked about. And, you know, they see that. They notice. Mm-hmm. They know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that in my own ward as women have gotten more involved and some of them have run for office. Like it just, the whole ward, even if they don't agree, the whole congregation, whole stake, even if they don't agree with you on all the issues, when you're running for office, they still, it inspires them and it makes them get involved and makes them realize they can do it too.
Well, you know, and it's very interesting when you step forward as a woman of strength, all kinds of people are not only attracted to that, but lean on that. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. Women around me that were like, you know, I felt so much more strengthened after I saw you do that. I realized I can do, you know, important things as well. And they come to you for help and advice and a loving, supportive ear, but they come to you for strength.
Yeah.
You know, I just spoke last night on my pro-life efforts, you know, and just a bunch of women came up wanting to tap into that strength of conviction, you know, and that confidence that comes in speaking truth. And they kind of want to absorb a little bit of that, be influenced by that, lean on that a little bit. And so, like I say, I don't think we will ever realize the influence that we have by doing these simple things, until a year after probably. But it, I, you know, after a lifetime of doing all this, it's incredible. It's incredible. I have people come up, you know, back in 1997, you know, I met you and you're like, really? You know, I mean, it just really is astounding, the influence that you have when you go on this path.
Yeah, you can change people's lives and change how they view things and inspire them constantly. And you have clearly been an inspiration to many. So it's amazing what you've done.
I've been changed and inspired by others, you know, so I just am passing along, you know. I've been very blessed.
Well, what advice would you offer someone who's just starting to consider getting involved in public service?
Okay, so first of all, confirm it with the Lord. Second of all, confirm it with your spouse. Now, it's very interesting. If you're married, spouses react very differently to this. My husband wants me to run for president of the United States. You know, I've been blessed to have that kind of a husband.
He's wise.
And he just is always, he does not, he never complains about meetings that I have to do or work that I have to do. Never, never. So I was very blessed to have that. Not everyone has that. And some spouses are very threatened. Some spouses are very protective. I've had experiences that were very negative where people were really beating on me. And that was hard on my husband. And I finally I can't tell you how many times I've had to sit him down and say, I'm the candidate. I have to handle this. In fact, when I just ran for the legislature, I sat him down and I said, okay, honey, here's our talk. You cannot, you know, you can't post comments. You can't, you know, write letters. You cannot, you know, fight my battles for me. And so that's a conversation that I think is super important because our wonderful, loving husbands want to protect us. And some things are going to happen. And so I think it's really important to have that conversation and to have the conversation with your children. You know, anytime I do something like, I was, you know, like I say, working on Prop 8, and I had to sit the kids down and go, okay, we're going to get death threats, or, you know, all these things are going to happen. And they're like, yeah, bring it. They're great. In fact, I have to laugh now that they're adults, and my oldest, Connor Boyack, does politics full time. So, you know, we need to have those conversations with our spouse and our families. And then I think it's very important to build your base. The most important thing you can do after getting your head on straight and getting centered on why you're running, if you can't answer that question, don't run. If you can't answer why, don't run. But once you've got that centered on why I'm running and, you know, and what you want to do, then you really have to work on building that base. I accumulate base all the time. Base is people that know who you are, and that support you. And they don't even have to be all that supportive. They can be people that you know that are not against you. I mean, that bar is really low. And so we, you know, I tell everybody, start accumulating your base, start gathering phone numbers, start gathering emails, start reaching out and networking, talking to people, and build that database of people that if you say Marilee Boyack, they say, oh yeah, I know her, or I've heard of her. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's what you want, is to build that base. And then also I think it's really important to build a resume of service. Now that's been an interesting shift moving here to Utah. Mm-hmm. I was in California for 32 years and resume was just critically important. You know, what have you done for the community? Here in Utah, it's a very different flavor here. Here, people run all the time just because they want to do something. And I'm like, well, what have you been doing for the last 10 or 20 years you've lived in the community? You know, they're like, well, you know, I was on my HOA board for a year. I'm like, nope, sorry. You need to build your resume. And rarely is running for public office the first thing you do. It can be, but it's rare. So you begin working in the community. What is it? Are you going to be involved in your child's you know, private school advisory board? Are you going to be involved in your children's sports? Are you going to join the Parks and Rec committee? Are you going to be involved in the arts? I don't care, whatever it is. Just start, you know, building your resume of involvement, of things that you are out there willing to do. Because not only will you build your base and your networking, you will build your knowledge base and your expertise, and you will become a name. People kind of go, oh yeah, you know, that's you know, Maria over there, you know, and she's done this and this. And so you build that resume, take pictures of everything as you build your resume, because you'll need them for when you run for office.
That's good advice.
Build your picture base is another important one. I've had to do a few reenactments, which were kind of silly. And so, you know, build that and seek relationships with the 100 vote getters. There are people in your community that control 100 votes. I control thousands of votes. And the entire weeks of voting, my email is and texting is buzzing like crazy. People going, do you support this person? Who should I vote for? You know, what do you think? Because they don't have the time, bandwidth, interest, or whatever to do the work on their own. That's who you want to network with. Okay.
Yeah.
You may know 20 moms that are great, but there may be one kick butt grandma who has been involved forever and knows everybody. That's who you want to build a relationship with, because they control so many votes. And so it's way more effective to build your base with those kind of people if you can. And those kind of people love sharing. They love it when you come to them and say, hey, you know, I'm kind of interested in getting involved in the community. Oh, music to their ears. They just love you. And it isn't like, you know, and I say, you know, you're an important person, you know, you're a person of influence, you know, a little flattery helps, you know, but
yes,
I have never met a person that was like that who said, leave me alone, you know, I don't want to be involved with you. They are networking people. They love people. They're typically, not always, but typically extroverts. And so one more, bring it. They're going to love that. Yeah. So build your base and include those 100 vote getters, and then get really clear on your issues. This requires study. This requires effort. This requires talking to other people and finding how they feel about these issues. But nothing will bowl you over faster than, and frankly, I should have done better on this on my last campaign. and just dig down, you know, into those issues, start studying them, start talking to people who are in charge of things, and learn, get your learning going. You get all that, you're unstoppable.
Yeah.
Absolutely unstoppable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And everybody worries about money. Do not worry about money. Do not worry. Money is the last thing you need to worry about. Okay. I'm just telling you, the money will come. Okay. If the Lord wants you there and you've done all this work, you know, preparing, the money will come. Do not worry about the money. Everybody's like, oh, I don't have enough money to do that. Don't even worry about it. This last campaign, I'd only lived in Utah for 7 years. I didn't know that very many people because, you know, the wards are super small here. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? $70,000 later. Okay. Don't worry about the money.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. No. And if you're doing the other things that you just talked about and building your network and serving in the community, you are absolutely right. The money will come. People know you and they want to help you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
with that said, I am fearless in asking for money. You know, my motto in life is the worst thing they can do is say no. Mm-hmm. Okay, who cares? You know? And so I'm fearless on asking, and I ask everybody. And so the money comes, and I know it's hard. I know that's really awkward. You know, but people want to help you, and if they want to help you, they'll invest in you, even if it's, you know, $20.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know, that's okay. Like I say, worst thing they can say is no. Big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and a lot of people aren't accustomed to giving to political campaigns. So you really do have to ask them because they wouldn't think of it. Yeah. So you have a lot of issues that you've worked on and you've been passionate about and you've, you know, done so much to further. How did those issues come to you? I mean, how did you decide, okay, these are the issues that I care about? Like, what was that process like?
I'll say it's twofold. One is the Lord guiding me to do certain things. Okay. And I have very much felt that. Interestingly, kind of not at the time, but in retrospect, I look back and go, oh yeah, I can see now why. But that influence is something I cannot deny. It's been there my whole life. As long as you're willing to ask, and I ask practically every day, what do you want me to do? What's my mission? What do you want me to do? If you keep asking that and stay listening, it will come. But I was 50 before I really got some major insight into my role that I was going to play in fighting for the family. I was 50 years old when I finally got that inspiration. So, and then I looked back and went, oh yeah, hello, look at all this, you know, and it was just, you could just see the Lord guiding you. So that's one. But the other thing is, I think we need to listen to our heart. So I began with my children. Of course, I thought, you know, I want to be involved. And back then that was the day when, you know, public school wasn't as frightening as it is now. I just, you know, like I say, I wouldn't ever have my kids at public school now. But back then I had mine in and I thought, I started with PTA. I went to my first PTA meeting and they said, we need a vice president. And I just said, okay. Yeah. I'm a person that says yes. And so I just like, yes, okay. And I began making changes in the school. I began making changes in my community related to my children. And then I began to really open my eyes to my community, needs in my community. One of the projects that I did that was so fun, I was buddies with a homeless guy, Charlie. He'd blown out his brains on drugs, you know, and lived on the streets. And I would take him a pizza and socks. And, you know, I just kind of became friends with Charlie. And one day I was driving past Charlie and I thought, we can do better. We can do better. And then I started to think, I ponder a lot. Pondering is huge. And I pondered and I thought, how can we help our homeless community? And it wasn't very big. Probably it wasn't that big. We had about 55,000 people. But I thought, how can we help them? And I thought, you know, if everybody did a little, we could help them. And so I had this brilliant idea, which means it was not for me, of asking all of the local churches to adopt a homeless person in our community. Huh. I thought we had 12. Alas, no. Come to find out, when I reached out to the school district, we had about 20 kids, teenagers, who had been kicked out of their homes because the parents were on drugs or whatever, and they were couch surfing. And then they had about another 50 families who were living in garages, living behind people's homes. I was like, wait a minute, what? Wow. I was shocked. So I reached out to all the churches, synagogues, temple, all of them. and said, will you adopt one person? That did not mean they needed to find them housing. Most did not want housing. I said, but, you know, if they need a shower, if they need their clothes washed, if they need to go to the dentist, can you do that? Every single church, except for one that will remain nameless, every single other church said yes. Huh. And they would get them. I'll never forget one. They got this girl, come find, and her mom was a drug addict and it kicked her out. Come to find out she had been baptized 2 years prior, but didn't know how to contact the church because they had moved so much. They got her set up in a ward, got her an apartment, got it fully furnished, got her a job, assigned families to take care of her, and came back within weeks and said, that was so awesome. Can we have another one?
Yeah.
And wow. So we ended up with about 20 couch surfing teenagers that all had permanent housing in 2 weeks flat.
Wow.
Most of the families found permanent housing situations, even though, like I say, that was not the goal. The goal was just support. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
And I moved and I asked the Seroptimus, which is kind of like a female Rotary, you know, service club, if they would take it over. And they said yes. And there was one couch surfing girl that had popped up. And the woman that took over the project met with her and said, oh my gosh, she was my son's best friend for years, and took her in and gave her a home to finish raising that teenage girl. So there are things that call your heart that you see out there. If you say the words, I think somebody should do something about that, that somebody's you. Mm-hmm. That's the Lord saying, your job. And then as you begin to ponder and talk to people and say, how can we work on this? How can we solve this? It's just mind-blowing what can happen. And I was led to do Family Watch International. I was executive director there. That's a global nonprofit protecting families all over the world. It's incredible. But then felt the call to do pro-life work. And now I'm doing pro-life work. We've saved 43 babies this year. And so you just follow those little nudgings, follow your heart, follow things you see that touch your heart and you think, and then go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. That's incredible. Such great advice and amazing stories of helping those people who, you know, like you said, you thought there were 12 and there are so many more, and you were able to help so many people just with something that seems pretty simple, have a church adopt, and you know, what a great idea. That was a fun one.
Did not cost a dime. Yeah. Did not cost a dime. Took me about 2 weeks to pull together. Mm-hmm. And it's an ongoing project. The minute a homeless person pops up in that community, boom, taken care of.
Yeah.
We can put things in place that will last beyond us.
Yeah. And all the people who are helping too. I mean, that's such a blessing in their lives to know more about the story and their perspective and have an opportunity to reach out and help someone. So that's incredible. Mm-hmm. I love that so much. We're running out of time, unfortunately, because I think I could talk to you for a really long time about this stuff, but do you have an invitation or something that you could invite our guests to do something this week to further their path along to public service?
Yes. And it's going to be a super easy one. I want you to pray every day and say, Heavenly Father, I want to do good. What do you recommend? But what's more important is what you do after that prayer. I want you to spend 15 minutes every day this week pondering. And just tune into yourself and ponder. What can I do? What touches my heart? What's my skill set? What does the Lord want me to do? And just ruminate on that for a week. After a week of that, then begin to sit down and identify the next two steps that you can take to do that. Just two steps. People stop at one. So do two. And then give yourself some firm time commitment our HOA is horrendous. I'm going to start attending HOA meetings. And anyone that wants to run for office, you must attend the meetings. And so maybe yours is, you know, I want to run for office in 5 years. Okay, start attending the meetings. Mm-hmm. And that's in person. That's not Zoom, because Zoom does not network.
Yep.
Zoom does not network. So that means in person. And even if you go once a month because of your family constraints or whatever. So whatever it is, I want you to ponder this week. So many people go, oh, I want to be like you. I want to do what you do. And I say, no, don't do that. Do what the Lord wants you to do. Do what you have the skill set for. And But the only way we can do that is to spend some time, invest that time thinking and pondering and letting that. We run out such ridiculous. If I hear one more person say I'm busy, I'm just going to blow a gasket. We all have the same amount of time. Use it. Mm-hmm. Use that time. And if these kind of things, frankly, to be honest, if you're listening to this podcast, the Lord's already called you.
Yeah, that's, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Let's be honest. Okay. If you're listening, man, you already got the call. So let's get going, shall we? Yeah. And like I say, I'm happy to mentor people if they want to reach out to me. And I assume you're going to post contact information. I'm absolutely happy to talk to people, happy to answer questions, happy to come up with ideas. If you go to my website, marilyboyack.com, and click on service, and there's like 4 million ideas there. And I think the other thing that I'm going to give you a homework assignment on, I'm going to give them two, man. I'm going to stretch them a little.
Perfect.
The other one is create a life of service for your children and your grandchildren. And I wrote a book, 52 Weeks of Fun Family Service, and they have family home meeting lessons and ideas of 52 things you can do to serve. We raised our children serving in the community. Several of them ended up going and doing humanitarian work in Africa. Some of them, you know, Connor does politics for a little time. The other one, they're all contributors. Why? Because they were raised doing the works of Jesus. Mm-hmm. They were raised, we didn't wait for the church to do it or the scouts to do it. We raised our children in our home doing the works of service. So I would encourage you to create that culture in your own home that changes and impacts generations, mm-hmm. generations beyond you.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
That's all your homework.
Yep. That's good homework. I'm going to absolutely be doing that this week and beyond. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Marilee, for joining us today. I feel like I learned a ton from you and so inspiring. I was writing all these quotes down as we were going. So I'm excited to listen again after. And thank you everyone who tuned in today and listening to the Project Elected podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to projectelectwomen.org and would love it if you'd subscribe to our podcast, rate us, or give us a review on iTunes. Until next time, thank you so much.